Update. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Now, my next guest is an accomplished amateur boxer who I just know is set for big things in the future. Her battles outside the ring, though, have led her to being the woman and competitor she is today. Mary Kate Slattery, you are very welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you.
I'm a big fan, so thank you for having me.
Oh, listen. And I'm a fan of yours. Are you able to train at the moment?
Yeah, still training. Thankfully, elite and professional sports are continuing. So I'm very, very lucky. It's a massive privilege at the moment.
Oh, great. And how does it all work with social distancing and boxing? And how does that all work?
It kind of relies on us getting tested regularly.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a small bubble. There's only six of us in the gym. So we're, you know, very careful with our movements, and we're very lucky to be where we are.
Yeah. How many tests do you reckon you've had? Are you flat out with the testing?
Yeah, to be honest, like every couple of weeks we get it done just to make sure we're on top of it, you know, and like professional sports still continuing internationally. So they're being really good. Like there's a few of the lads in the gym, they're fighting next week. So when they go out, they get tests on the way and tests way back. And then there's 2 weeks of quarantining, obviously.
Okay. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Big deal. But you have to take it seriously because, yeah, it's no joke.
It's no joke. No, it's not.
No joke.
Now, let's talk serious for a bit, because when you think of boxing, which we're talking about, you need a lot of guts. You need a lot of guts going into a ring, and your past has given you plenty of them. You were diagnosed with anorexia at 10. I mean, the age you were, it just seems so, so young. And overcoming it really was the fight of your life, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it was something that, you know, when I reflect on it now, it's kind of hard to relate because it was it's something that dominated my life, my family's life, you know, for 4 years. And I just didn't get the help in Ireland that I needed, you know, in and out of Crumlin, and God bless them, they did the best that they could for me. But it just, it required more help at that stage. So I went to London when I was, 2009?
Yeah.
2009 I went over and got the help that I needed. And I'm really privileged because not everybody gets that opportunity. And the other thing is, you know, to fully recover from anorexia is a massive win, you know. So I like to speak about it because I know that not everybody is that lucky. So it was a massive fight, and very challenging few years, but it definitely made me who I am today, and I wouldn't actually change any part of it, you know. It's a weird thing to say, but I really think it gave me the skills and gave me, you know, the ability to take on everyday challenges, but also take on fighting, take on everything else, you know, with positivity, because I'm just lucky.
Can you talk to me about what was going on around the age of 10 and what led to this diagnosis?
Yeah, I've always had a kind of an innate part of me that strives for perfectionism.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of combined with a bereavement, and not processing grief, that kind of compounded my need for control and my fear of lack of control. So anorexia is a really difficult disease, you know, and I always say I'm no expert in it, but I'm an expert in my own experience. And it's something that, you know, I look back on and I think it's very manipulative. It was very manipulative for me, a really difficult addiction, you know. But it's something that is symptomatic of a far greater problem. And that is the fear of control and the fear of not being the best. And that striving mentality that just exhausts you, but you're addicted to it at the same time. And that's what it was for me, you know, getting the buzz off starving, getting the buzz off knowing that I was losing weight, that I was shocking people, all of that. It was just a really, really dark place to be. And I know that so many people are affected by it. It's an epidemic, really, like when you think about it. Whenever I speak about it, I'm always shocked about the people who reach out to me and say, at least, you know, they have somebody in their family or they know somebody affected by this disease. Like it's frightening. So it's something that people need to speak out on and talk about and normalize, you know.
Mary Kate, what did it do to your health?
My physical health?
Yeah.
Or my Well, I was very, very thin. You know, my organs were weak. You know, I was in a bad way. God love me. Like, I was really, you know, but I didn't see it that way. That's the problem. Like, you know, until I went to London and I was there probably for my sixth or seventh week, looking at these nurses and doctors and kind of going, the whole time I was like, look, you're the ones with the problem. There's absolutely nothing wrong with me. You know, it takes that. Just being broken down and just realizing that you're actually ill. I think that's when the recovery really started for me.
You were diagnosed at 10. At 12, you were taken to London. So that is that 2 years of in and out of Crumlin and looking for help here.
Yeah.
And this is something I want to talk to you about. Why did you have to go to London? Why wasn't the help here?
They just didn't have the infrastructure. They didn't have the resource. It was, you know, me meeting my psychiatrist, who was absolutely incredible. She is a legend, you know, and still somebody I look up to so much. But she just was on her own, you know, and she tried her best. She tried to help. And we met once a week in a porter cabin out the back of Crumlin. But it just wasn't what enough. I needed. I was at the stage where, you know, when I went to London, I was assigned two nurses. I was assigned a doctor for me. You know, that infrastructure was there that I needed, because it was just too far gone. You know, when I was in Crumlin, the focus was getting me out of getting me to a BMI, or getting me to a kind of a weight index that would make sure that my organs weren't, you know, going to fail, you know. Yeah, but it was not what I needed in terms of fixing the real problem.
So did your consultant, did she say we need to get you to London, or was it your family that did a bit of research? How did the London thing
It was a combined effort.
Was it?
It was a combined effort. And when we went to London, you know, I was met with, like, it was a kind of a clinical, you know, an assessment to see whether I was eligible or not, you know. And she said, I remember my parents fighting tooth and nail, just saying, we're not leaving. We're not leaving without her, you know, getting a bed here. Like, we're not doing another year in Crumlin, and, you know, and for only another relapse to happen. So they really fought. And the doctors, in fairness, when they went, yeah, you're eligible. We'll take you on. So it was the intensity and the strictness of that psychiatric unit that really brought me back, you know.
How long were you there for?
I was in there for just under a year, and then an outpatient for another year. Yeah.
So your family's whole life must have had to change dramatically with the 12-year-old in London.
They did so much. Like, I don't know how they did it, because it was almost easier for me. I was a changeling in the whole experience. I was on a different alternate universe, you know.
Totally.
And they just... they tolerated so much, you know, and they also just put everything on the line. My sisters as well, like, you know, they were back in Ireland. They'd be left in neighbors' houses, go to aunts and uncles, you know. They were so patient, and I feel so grateful. You know, I wouldn't have been able to recover had they not put so much time and effort into me. And I hope that I'm doing them proud now. You know?
Oh, my God, you are. And I'm sure most families would do the same if, you know, because this is a disease. I mean, if you had a child that was sick from cancer, you do whatever it took to get them the treatment they need. And the same with this disease as well. So I'm sure that the road to recovery was long and emotional. What did you have to do? So you stayed in for a year, and was it just counselling on an ongoing basis? Do you remember a breakthrough moment, or do you remember a time when you thought, I want to get better now?
Yeah, I remember a few of them, you know. I don't think it happens overnight. It's really hard, and it's definitely not a linear process. I mean, it was, you know, I'd have a few good days and then I'd take 10 steps back, and it was really grueling. Like, it was, you're grappling with this part of your brain, that part of you loves it. Like, the way I saw it was, I was trying to divorce this part of my mind that was telling me that I should starve myself. And if I do that, I'll feel better, and I'll be safe, and I'll have all of these merits, you know. And it's trying to just sever that connection to a part of you that you think is doing you good, but it's not. And it's like trying to trust other people around you was a massive thing as well for me, you know. and stop trusting that part of my brain that was a safety blanket because I was so tethered to it for so long.
So it's a long process.
Grueling, long process. It really is.
What would you say to families who have daughters, sisters, or even friends that are going through the same thing? Is patience key with this?
Patience is massive, but also it's about trying to get as much help as you can. I know my parents did the best, but I think that, you know, whenever I do speak to families and I speak to kids and people that are going through it, and I always say just reach out and know that you know you can get your life back. You don't need to live with this part of you that is dominating you, that is bullying you essentially into, you know, taking everything from you and your quality of life. And it's not something you have to live with. I think that's the saddest part, is that I do see people kind of just resign to the fact that, oh, you know, I'm 30 now and I've had this since I was 18. I'll never get rid of it. Of course you can. It's not going to be easy, and it's hard, and it's, yeah, it's arduous, but you can do it. You can do it.
Well, you're proof of it. You really are. Can we talk about cognitive behavioral therapy? Because you say that was key here. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, CBT is the ticket. Honestly, it's the best.
Sell it to me.
For me anyway, you know, like, because I'm so, even now, it's something that I have every single day. You know, these negative automatic thoughts will come and they'll take over. And I'm a real, you know, I'm quite a dramatic person as well. So like, if I'm not getting something done, I'll never finish it. I'll never get this. I'll never manage that. This is impossible. Like, all of these, you know, thoughts seem to just come naturally to me. So it's about kind of taking them and dissecting them, going, what is the evidence for this? And what is the evidence against it? And 99% of the time, these thoughts that you're feeling, they aren't real. They're all irrational, you know? And the thing is that they're fine by themselves, but it's the path they take you down. You know, when you feel overwhelmed, then you feel like everything is against you. You know, all of the odds are stacking up. It's about just, you know, taking that first brick and throwing it away, because it's not going to build a positive wall, you know. So that's
is this something that we can teach ourselves?
Definitely. I really think so. Like, for me, an example of, you know, when I wrote in the Independent a few weeks ago, you know, I spoke about, you know, my 13-year-old self, you know, coming home from London and trying to get her homework done, and not having been in school for what, like 3 or 4 years, kind of going, I'm never going to get all of this done, and being overwhelmed by the fact that there was homework, that there was things. So I'd go, I'm never going to get this finished. And I remember on like my copybooks, I used to write, I'll never get all of this work done. And then split the page down in half, and I go, what's the evidence for this? What's the evidence against that? And it takes time at first, but it becomes second nature. You know, it becomes this, you can go, that's actually not a true thought. Of course I'm going to get it done. Might take a little bit longer, but here's the reality, you know? And there are these little things that seem so simple, but are often the most profound.
Did you learn this in your therapy as a kid? Is this something that you've stumbled upon recently? Or how did the whole cognitive behavioural therapy come about?
That's what I started with Fiona when I was in Crumlin. Wow. That was my CBT. I started that, you know, when I was really at the start of my journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was something that just clicked and resonated with me, because, you know, with addiction and with anorexia, you have so much irrational fear. And like, you really do live in fear, fear of, you know, losing control, fear of gaining weight, fear of, you know, not being perfect, or in that, you know, be taken from your striving mode, which kind of keeps you, it's like your live wire, you know? So for me, it was that just ability to go, what's the evidence for this thought? There's actually none, you know? And then letting it go, you know, being able to let it go because I've proven that it's not real.
Isn't it great that you saw that therapist who gave you those tools to implement, to for you to work on that part, which it sounds like it's a huge part of your recovery at the time. So tell me about how the boxing came into all of this, and when did that happen? I mean, talk about a phenomenal U-turn.
Yeah, a bit of a mad one, and it kind of came out of nowhere, and it really, like, Jennifer, I was in the right place at the right time, because I met two of my friends, and when I was volunteering in Lourdes, over a pint, they said to me, do you want to do a fight night? Would you do a fight night? Like, would you put on a white collar fight night for Crumlin? And I was like, absolutely, I'd love to, you know, like, as a charity thing. So I was 18, no, I was 17, maybe 18 when I first found boxing, which is late, you know, in comparison to the girls that I'd be competing against now, that all have started a lot younger, you know. But I just fell in love. It was the intensity of the training as well. Like, I'm a very all or nothing person, and I think that probably comes through. But I like to be kind of consumed by things, and I definitely found
boxing
that
boxing is
the
one. Yeah, the training.
Listen, you give so much to get so little in return, and that for me was so exciting, because it was like, I have so much energy, I have so much, you know, drive in me, that it actually neutralized me as I went on. It kind of took the extremist, you know, kind of compulsion mindset out of me, because, you know, I was able to apply it to that part of my life. Whereas before it manifested in addiction, or, you know, it manifested with my anorexia. It was just, I was able to just go, whoa, I can positively channel all of this energy into my sport.
How do you view your body now?
I view it as, you know, it's my tool. It's my, you know, it's not something that I criticize as much, you know, not in terms of the beauty standards, which I was very taken in by as a child, you know, the kind of early 2000s representation of beauty and being stick thin and all of that, you know. I really, you know, I craved that as a 10-year-old and 9-year-old, which is really sad, but I guess I just really liked magazine and I love fashion, and it was just kind of, it was in, you know, rosy tinted lens for me. And now I just go, like, you know, my biggest insecurity growing up were my legs, you know, my thighs. And now I see them, that's where my power comes from, you know, and that's where, you know, my ability to kind of, you know, punch hard, my power is my engine, you know, and that's
amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it
really
is.
And if you could speak to your 10-year-old self, struggle so badly, what would you say to her?
I don't know, that's a really nice thing. I would just give her a hug, honestly. I saw a picture there the other day, and I shared it with a friend of mine, like, of me when I was, you know, really sick. I had an NG tube in, and I was wearing a little tutu, and, like, you know, you're still a child. I would just hug her. I just hug her and just say, you're a legend. You're doing a great job, and you'll get there, you know.
And she would hug you back and go, well, I've heard all about you, and you're a bit of a legend as well. And you're doing a phenomenal job. Yeah. Are you going to go professional, do you think?
I'd love to. I'd love to. Everything's up in the air at the moment. You know, it's hard to plan anything, but it would be it would be phenomenal. And, you know, it's always been the plan. So
It's great that it's come into your life. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, the training alone. Having reaped the benefits of CBT, do you have any tips for the rest of us?
Tips? Yeah. Well, you know, like, CBT is one thing, but I wrote a piece in the Independent a few weeks ago about hopeful, like a kind of hopeful living and a positive manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, like, just about, you know, I wrote it in a very different headspace. I wrote it when I was kind of struggling with my anxiety in the first lockdown. And I started writing lists of things that helped me. Like, I saw them as my kind of defense mechanisms. So in terms of tips, like, move your body. That was my number one thing. And I think it's so important. We put so much credence on trying to figure out what's going on in our minds, when sometimes we get lost in a story. You know, and the reality of it, is, you know, just by moving your body and getting your heart rate pumping, you can actually shift the narrative in your mind. You can shift out of that kind of feeling poor me and feeling just crap, you know. That was number one for me. And I know that boxing is my therapy. So if you can, if you're able to, just move and don't try to get too attached to the negative thoughts. Like, there's ebbs and flows. The last 2 days for me, I've been crying on tap, you know, and I don't know where it's coming from, but I'm not getting too attached to it. I'm just going, okay, you know, tears want to come, tears want to happen. Let's lean into it. And the other thing is gratitude. Like, there's always something to be grateful for. No matter what situation you're in, there's always something. Even when you feel like it's all collapsing, try to be grateful for something. You know, whether it's a warm cup of tea or it's, you know, the birds singing in the morning, whatever it is, just try to be grateful for something. And take a rest. And don't feel guilty for taking rest. That's my number one thing. I always feel, you know, if I take too long to try and chill out, that I'm wasting my time. And it's this kind of toxic part of my mind. Mm. But I know that it's there, it exists. And take a rest and tell yourself you deserve it, you know?
I'm all for that.
And the last thing the last thing is, you know, this whole lockdown has given me a new appreciation for connections with people, and don't be afraid to ask for help. If you are feeling low, pick up the phone and ring someone. It's the brave thing to do. And don't fear what they're going to think. You know, people will meet you. So please do. If you are feeling low, ask for the help. There's no shame in it. And there's no shame in saying no either. So that's me.
Great
tips.
I have so many texts coming in for you. Do you mind if I read them to you?
Oh, please. Thank you.
What an amazing young lady Mary-Kate is. My sister had an eating disorder and it nearly broke her. It is a horrific disorder and it takes so much to overcome it. She's doing well now, but it was an awful time. That's from Kenny. Another texter says, Mary-Kate is amazing. She is set for big things. I had no idea she went through this. Fair play to her for being so open and honest. It will help so many people, and that it will. Mary-Kate, you're an absolute star.
That's amazing.
Keep in touch with us. We want to know how you're getting on in the future with your boxing career. Keep it up, and thank you so much for being so open and honest, and I wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon, Mary-Kate.
Talk to you soon.
Bye, love. Legends. Bye, 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 bye. There we go. That is Mary-Kate Slattery. Thank you so much again. And I just want to say, if you have been impacted by our chat today, you can visit bodywise.ie for help and advice.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.